You know, the Guardians were on three different channels over the weekend. And if you watch Friday night, you were watching on Apple TV and then on Out of the Norm. And then coming back on Sunday, it was, you know, Breakfast with the Guardians against St. Louis on a Roku start. And you're like, well, where's the game? Where am I trying to find this? And then, I mean, really, if you want to watch all the games, it's going to start costing you some cash. And there was a really interesting article that came out of the New York Times. June Lee, maybe remember from ESPN, spending time with the New York Times right now, and wrote a fantastic piece. And the big number that he came up with was $4,785. So we wanted to get June on because we wanted to talk about this a little bit and how much it costs to be a sports fan now. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. June, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, so give me a little bit of background on the story that you decided to do, and then how you came up with this number, 4,785, on how much it costs to be a sports fan now. Because if you really start thinking about it, well, you made us think about it, June.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, where this story started was I was part of the ESPN layoffs in 2023, and you know, I had a contract where I wasn't allowed to work for 2 years, and so you know, I kind of took the opportunity to take a step back and figure out just like what it was like to be a sports fan today. Like, you guys are in this industry, like, you understand that when you work in sports, like, you watch sports a little bit differently than a fan, because you know, you have to come up with opinions and you know, things to talk about on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, this is an opportunity for me to just like sit back and figure out like, you know, what is the fan experience actually like. And the thing that I noticed, and this was something I was already frustrated with, especially as a baseball fan, was the number of blackouts and the increasing number of streaming services. And then when I was just, you know, watching the NFL, watching the NBA, watching sports in general, it felt like over the last couple of years, the number of streaming services it took to watch everything was just continuing to increase. And it was just getting harder and harder to figure out where a game was actually playing on any given night. And, you know, the situation that you guys described about what it was like to watch the Guardians this past weekend, I think is becoming increasingly common across America. And so I just wanted to figure out, like, how expensive is it to actually be a sports fan? And so what I did was calculate the cost of being able to watch basically every single game as a hardcore sports fan in 2004 versus 2024. And that includes, you know, basically all the league packages to the cost of internet now in 2024, 2025, a ticket to every single game, and I think it was two hats and two jerseys as a hardcore sports fan. And that number came up to $4,785. And it was a 260% increase, I believe, over the course of 20 years. And in that same time, wages in America have only risen by 87%. And so we're seeing this exponential growth cost in being a sports fan, while, you know, the average American hasn't seen even double the wages increase in that same period.
June, with it costing more for the typical, let's just say in this case, baseball fan, to watch his or her team, then you have the teams maybe not getting the money that they used to. You know, Guardians are in a different situation now with the MLB package. Dodgers are in a completely different stratosphere. Same thing with the Yankees. It would appear to me that, okay, this is the golden goose that's, you know, laying the golden eggs, and eventually it's not going to be laying those golden eggs anymore. Do you think the sports are concerned that that's the situation, that this is like, hey, there's such a disparity here, this isn't going to work? Or are they okay with just trying to milk it for all they can right now?
I think that they're okay with milking it for all that they can. And I think you guys in Cleveland are actually really lucky in that you have a really good, well-run organization that's been able to kind of maximize the budget constraints that come with operating in a place like Cleveland. I know that I've talked to kind of smaller market executives that aren't in Cleveland, and they're having a much harder time because of the collapse of the regional sports network. And the gap right now, as you mentioned, between a team like the Dodgers, a team like the Yankees, even the Red Sox, Mets, Cubs, were able to make more money from their regional sports networks because they just simply have a bigger kind of base fan base, whether it's in the United States or around the world. They just have more cash on hand. And I think that we're going to start seeing more and more teams over the course of the next decade take money from private equity because, you know, the league's number one priority. I mean, I heard this from Major League Baseball, but I've heard this from the NBA and NFL as well about how international growth is the league's number one priority. I really think it's one of the most under-talked about stories in all of sports. And in order to be able to grow internationally, in order to grow fan bases and kind of build the power of American sports around the world, you know, you need more cash. And a lot of these organizations, are, you know, the owners, for reasons both justified and not, aren't willing to kind of take out money and loans from the bank on the values of these franchises, which continue to go up and up and up. And so, you know, because they need more cash, they're trying to just make as much money as they can year over year. I mean, we see this in Pittsburgh. I think that they're the foremost example, where Bob Nutting is one of the most profitable owners in all of Major League Baseball. And the reason he does that is he puts out a cheap, terrible team every single year. And so if you're trying to compete, for example, like the Minnesota Twins, if you're trying to compete for a playoff spot and you want to spend money, but you also like don't have the cash to do it, they recently switched over this past season to a streaming over regional sports network model. They don't have as much cash on hand as they did in the past because they don't have that cable money flowing in. They don't have people who, you know, don't watch sports helping basically pay for the Twins payroll through cable. And so, you know, I really worry for where kind of these, you know, smaller market, mid-market teams are going to be headed in the future, because I really think that they're kind of prime candidates for private equity to be investing. And we've seen what private equity has done, not just in sports, but, you know, around the country across a whole different load of industries.
There was always talk, and it was Joe Tate that said this, right, Jeff? The great play-by-play guy for the Cavaliers, Joe Tate, would say that he thought at some point that the NBA would become, what was it,
like,
Jeff?
Like a dinner theater.
Yeah, like dinner theater, because so few people would be able to afford to go to the games and sit there. And then it was funny because you were talking about the beginning about if you wanted to watch, you know, games with, and then you threw in two hats and two jerseys. But I don't think you didn't throw in parking or food into that, did you?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I didn't.
So, I mean, just, I mean, how hard is it really to be a sports fan as a family of four? I think about it all the time. I mean, like, going out to dinner used to be a lot of fun. Now it just feels like it's expensive. And then throw sports into it, it gets really expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story is kind of reflective of more than just sports right now. Like, we live in a time where in this past election, regardless of what your political views are, you know, people are talking about the price of eggs as a central political issue in the election. And so if people are complaining about the price of eggs, you know, what does that mean for, you know, being able to watch sports, which is, you know, obviously much more of a secondary concern about whether or not you can even afford eggs or food in the first place. And I think, you know, sports is one of those things, especially in a day and age where people aren't really watching the same TV shows anymore. Like, I imagine you guys have had the conversation with people in your life where someone mentions this great TV show that they're watching and you've never even heard of it before because it's on a streaming service that you might not be on, or you're just in like different information universes. And, you know, I think when we live in a time with as much political polarization as we do right now, sports is one of the few things that is able to unite people and is able to, you know, start small talk. And I really think that like trust is built through these kinds of small talk conversations. Like, if you're able to talk about whether or not you feel like, you know, the Guardians are doing a good job building out, I don't know, the pitching rotation or the bullpen or the depth in the roster, and you're able to have arguments about that with people who might have different political opinions from you, whether it's friends or family or whatever, mm-hmm. I think it really builds up a foundation for when you do have to talk about more serious issues, to be able to tackle those with a place of, you know, feeling like you know that the person is coming from a good place because you've had these conversations about, you know, the Guardians bullpen or whatever it might be. And so, you know, sports has this massive potential to be this, like, uniter among people. And I think that the way that it is getting chopped up and become more expensive, just simply to even not even go to the game, but just like to watch it at home on TV, it frays those bridges that I really worry about in a day and age where there's just not a lot of things that people feel like they can relate to a stranger over.
June Lee joining us, sports journalist, great piece out in the New York Times over the weekend about the cost of trying to stay on top of all your sports and paying for all the different subscriptions. You can also watch June's YouTube channel. It's at IMAM, June Lee, JOONLEE. One thing you wrote in the New York Times thing, June, that I thought, man, that's so, it's right on the money. Your dad, diehard Red Sox fan, and he doesn't watch anymore because of the cost that's involved, and he just doesn't want to pay for it. And I know fans who are just like that. And then you pointed out that the NFL which of course is the most popular, you know, league on in our country, if not on the planet. Soccer guys might argue with me on that. They're holding out and still doing network deals. But boy, you're seeing them all over the place now. Is the NFL the last holdout here for really hammering the network TV, or do you think that's going to go bye-bye in the years ahead?
I mean, from the conversations I've had with people on the media side, this we're just at the tip of the iceberg with where the NFL is at. I think that they've been the most conservative with moving over to streamers, but we saw this with the Christmas game last year. I had one of my really close friends, he's an Eagles fan. He went home for Christmas last year, and his mom was just asking him, like, why can't we just turn on the game? Like, why do you have to log in and do all these other things? And he's just like, well, that's just not how football works anymore. And, you know, I think the NFL has done a good job of trying to maintain as much access as possible through the broadcast networks. And it's why it's the most popular, you know, league in the United States. But we're headed towards an era where, you know, Amazon games already happening. YouTube is looming over all of this. You know, there's a lot of conversations that I've had with people over at YouTube where they're clearly expressing interest in moving further into sports, and they're going to be broadcasting a game for free. You know, that they're not going to require a subscription service for this, but it's going to be for free. But it's just another streaming service that you're going to have to go to watch a week one game, I think in Brazil or in Mexico, one of the two. And so, you know, this is just the NFL wants to grow abroad as well. And in order to do that, you need to make those games much more accessible. To people around the world on the internet. And so I think we're at the tip of the iceberg. And from all the conversations, like, you know, the NFL's broadcast rights deals, I think are up in 2029. People are really eyeing what the NFL is going to do to that. And they're almost, you know, whether it's broadcast networks, NBC, they're all kind of tiptoeing around the fact that, you know, they want to stay in the NFL's good graces, but also, you know, everything is moving to the internet. And if the NFL wants to be able to maximize its ambitions to be a global sport, it's going to have to reach people on the internet, and it's going to kind of lead to more and more people having to pay up in order to do that, unless some of the circumstances change here.
June, great talking to you. Appreciate it. Love to have you back on some other time too, especially that I think you made me smarter today when you just said sports sports is the uniter of conversations that can lead to more important conversations down the road. That's probably the most philosophical we've been in 13 years on this show.
Nice job, June.
So you have made us smarter today. Thank you, June.
I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, I think that these kinds of conversations happening on sports radio are really, really important.
It's awesome. Thank you, June. We'll talk to you soon.